Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. Hey, it's Monday, September 7th, and I hope you're having a great Labor Day. I've got the day off today, and after this episode, I'm going to head to the beach with some friends. Most people know Labor Day as the end of summer, the last barbecue before fall, maybe the last weekend that you're not supposed to wear white. But almost nobody knows that it exists because 30 workers were shot to death by federal troops in a Chicago rail yard, and the president who sent them needed a way to say sorry without actually saying sorry. Okay, let's get into this one. It all started in a town called Pullman, Illinois, which is just south of Chicago. About 12,000 people lived there, and every house, every store, every church, every school, all of it was owned by one man. His name was George Pullman. Pullman had made his fortune building railroad sleeping cars. The Pullman Palace Car Company didn't just employ the town's workers. It owned the town. It owned their homes, it owned the shops where they bought food, it even owned the church where they prayed. This was a company town, and Pullman ran it accordingly. He believed a clean, orderly environment would produce clean, orderly workers. The streets were paved, the lawns were manicured, and there was no elected government. There were no independent newspapers either. If you lived in Pullman, you rented from George Pullman. You bought groceries from George Pullman. You lit your home with gas that you paid George Pullman for. And if you complained, you were evicted. In 1893, a nationwide depression hit. Pullman laid off hundreds of workers and cut wages for the ones that he kept by about 30%. The rent and prices of goods in the company's stores did not change. Workers were going home with poverty wages after the deductions came out, and families were going hungry. A delegation of workers went to George Pullman to ask for relief. They didn't ask for higher wages, they just asked that the rents come down to match what they were now earning. But he refused to meet them. Instead, he fired them. And on May 11th, 1894, nearly 4,000 workers at the Pullman factory walked off of the job and went on strike. And what happened next turned a local strike into a national crisis. The American Railroad Union, led by a man named Eugene Debs, voted to support the Pullman workers. The union declared a sympathy boycott. Its members decided that they would refuse to handle any train pulling a Pullman sleeping car. This was devastating for Pullman, because he had a near monopoly on sleeping cars west of Chicago. The boycott effectively shut down rail traffic across 27 states, from Chicago to the West Coast. Mail delivery stopped. Commerce stopped. The country's arteries were blocked. The railroads panicked. A group called the General Managers Association, representing Chicago's railroad companies, appealed to the federal government to shut the strike down. And in Washington, an attorney named Richard Olney found his justification. During a Debs speech in Blue Island, Illinois, on June 29th, some people in the crowd set fires to nearby buildings and derailed a locomotive attached to a U.S. mail train. Only used that single act of violence, committed by people in a crowd, not by the union, to get a federal injunction against the entire strike. This was the first time in American history a federal injunction was used to break a strike. It forbade Debs and the union from doing anything to support or direct the work stoppage. On July 3rd, President Grover Cleveland sent 12,000 federal troops into Chicago. Illinois Governor John Peter Altgeld was livid. He had already called out state militia to prevent violence. He told Cleveland the federal intervention was unconstitutional and unnecessary, but Cleveland ignored him. Until the troops arrived, the strike had mostly been peaceful, but that changed immediately. On July 7, 1894, after days of building tension, National Guardsmen fired into a crowd of strikers and their supporters. 30 people died, and dozens more were wounded. Rail cars were burned, and the strike immediately collapsed. And 5 days before sending those troops, Cleveland had signed something else into law. On June 28, 1894, the very same week he was preparing to dispatch federal soldiers to Chicago, President Grover Cleveland signed a bill making the first Monday in September a federal holiday, and it was called Labor Day. This wasn't a coincidence. Cleveland was a Democrat, and labor unions were a key Democratic constituency. He was about to send troops to crush the biggest labor action in American history. And with midterm elections coming up in November, he needed to do something, anything, to signal that he was still on the side of the working man. So, he gave them a day off. But why the first Monday in September, right? Like, why not May 1st, which was already celebrated as International Workers' Day across many of the industrialized world? Well, that goes back to something even bloodier. On May 4th, 1886, a labor rally demanding the 8-hour workday gathered at Haymarket Square in Chicago. As police moved to disperse the crowd, someone, to this day nobody knows who, threw a dynamite bomb. 7 officers were killed and at least 4 civilians died. In the aftermath, 8 anarchists were convicted in a trial that legal scholars now consider a sham. 4 of them were hung, and 1 killed himself in prison. The Haymarket affair made May 1st radioactive in America. Socialist and anarchist movements in Europe seized on the date. By 1889, the Second International in Paris had declared May 1st International Workers' Day. Workers in dozens of countries marched under red banners. To an American president in 1890s, linking a federal holiday to May 1st meant linking it to socialism, anarchism, and a bombing that had terrified the political establishment. So, Cleveland picked September. The date wasn't random either. Union workers in New York had been organizing a labor holiday on the first Monday of September since 1882. In 1887, Oregon became the first state to make it official. And by 1894, 30 states already had their own September Labor Day laws. It was domestic. It had no connection to Haymarket bombings, and it carried no ideological weight. It was a parade and a picnic, not a rally. I will say, though, there is a dispute over who actually founded Labor Day. 2 different men, both New York labor organizers, both involved in the first parade on September 5th, 1882, and both with nearly identical last names. Peter J. McGuire, co-founder of the American Federation of Labor, is usually given the credit, but the New Jersey Historical Society has argued that it was actually Matthew McGuire, a machinist and secretary of the Central Labor Union. Matthew McGuire also happened to be a committed socialist who later ran for vice president on the Socialist Labor Party ticket in 1896, which may explain why the more conservative AFL preferred to credit the other guy. I think what I find interesting is that the holiday was probably founded by a socialist whose name was erased from the record, but it was made federal by a president who needed to cover for shooting workers. And the date was chosen specifically to avoid any association with the other guy, with that socialist international labor movement. Okay, let's keep going on what the holiday actually became. Eugene Debs went to prison. He served 6 months in Woodstock, Illinois for violating the injunction against the strike. While he was inside, friends visited and brought him books, and one of them gave him a copy of Karl Marx. Debs walked out of jail a committed socialist at this point, and he went on to run for president of the United States 5 times on the Socialist Party ticket, once from a prison cell after being convicted under the Espionage Act for opposing World War I, and in 1912 election, he nearly won 1 million votes, which is 6% of the popular vote. Despite having no advertising budget, no party machine, and no access to the newspapers that were owned by the people he was trying to unseat. By the way, let's get back to George Pullman for a second, the guy who caused all of this unrest. His reputation never recovered. A federal commission investigated the strike and concluded that his company town was un-American. Other industrialists call him a goddamn fool for refusing to negotiate. A court forced the Pullman Company to sell off the town, which was eventually annexed into Chicago. But Pullman himself refused to even discuss what had happened. When he died in 1897, his family buried him in a vault covered in reinforced concrete because they were afraid that union workers would dig up his body. And the holiday? Well, it detached from its history almost completely. Union membership in the United States has fallen by about 35% of the workforce in the 1950s to roughly 10% today. The fashion rule about not wearing white after Labor Day gets more public attention than any labor issue. The holiday most Americans celebrate is not one Cleveland signed into law. It's not the one that Peter McGuire or Matthew McGuire organized. It's a day off that exists because a president gunned down workers and then tried to buy back their union support with happiness and a barbecue and a day off. So let's close this one out. More than 90 countries celebrate workers on May 1st. The United States and Canada are the only ones that chose September. It's worth remembering why. Not because the date didn't matter, but because it mattered so much that the government went out of its way to pick a different one. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.